morning and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. I want to make a call out today to one of the area businesses that's just getting ready to open this Friday, the Silver Spot Theater. And they tell me they will be having the new Star Wars movie, but they open this Friday. So kind of think about getting your tickets there and stopping in to see a very gorgeous upscale theater. It was great to see it this morning before it opens. And on today's show, my guest is Bill Hendrickson, host of WCOM's Time Out, which airs Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. Bill is originally from Ohio, a small town there, Rittman. Educated there, went to the College of Worcester and got his degree, majoring in speech. He is a fellow classmate in high school with Toni Morrison, the America's Nobel Prize-winning author. And he's an Army veteran. He was drafted into the Army and spent 2 years in the Counterintelligence Corps, which I just have to ask you about today. That sounds like a very interesting thing to be doing during the Cold War. And his mission at that time was to protect the U.S. military and government from spies from the Soviet Union and others out of Eastern Europe. So, Bill, thanks for being on the show.
That's quite a story.
I know.
Where is that theater you're talking about?
It's over in the University Mall. They open this Friday. They're going to have this lovely restaurant inside there, too.
It's a regular public movie theater.
It is. It's called Silver Spot. I think it's their fourth theater in the country. They've got a couple down in Texas, and I think they're opening one in Florida also, if I remember the
University
press
Mall. Okay, well, and they're going to have the new Star Wars.
Yeah, which everyone's just like.
The lines will be around the block.
A lot of the theaters are saying that their ticket ordering systems were getting bogged down and their websites were crashing because of the traffic for that.
Probably.
Yeah. I said, well, I was going to announce that they were opening this Friday at the University Mall. It's 201 South Estes Drive in Chapel Hill. And they will have that Star Wars movie. So hopefully, I said, well, you'll probably just get mobbed getting the ticket sales. So check out, I think their website should be up. And just check out Silver Spot Theaters.
Okay, Silver Spot Theater. Okay. So they're a very special place. You say they serve meals?
Well, they're going to have, they have this lovely restaurant and bar set up at the front entrance. Just the crystal and the white napkins and
really?
The tablecloths
wow.
and everything. So
Typical Chapel Hill.
And like, I did not sample any of the food due to food allergies, but it looked so tempting. They had crab cakes and shrimp and I think it was shrimp and grits, deep fried little balls.
Oh, man.
They had bruschetta. They had these little grass-fed beef sliders.
So you've been in there.
I was there at 10 o'clock this morning for the pre-press kind of tour and stuff. I had to bug out before I actually took the tour. But it was pretty impressive, nice atmosphere, just gorgeous, it looked like, from the inside. So I'm sure
it sounds like it'll do well.
I think it should. I mean, They were still working on the exterior and some things, but They officially opened this Friday, so I told them I was going to give them a call out on the radio today.
Okay, well, that's great. See, as a guest, I'm learning things that I didn't expect to learn. You're supposed to learn about me, and I'm learning things from you.
Oh, we always have to learn about each other. That's why I said when we're on air, we're just having this lovely conversation between friends that are just meeting, and we get to have our listeners listen in on what we're learning about each
That's
other.
True. That's true.
So you've been doing your show, Time Out, airs here on WCOM on Mondays from 5 to 6 for how many years now?
Well, it'll be 10 years this summer.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. It's been a great experience because when you do a show like you do and like I do, interviewing so many interesting people, I tell you, I've learned a whole lot, a whole new world. I've had religious shows. I've had our congressman on several times. I have an ambassador, retired ambassador, on at least twice a year. I've had comic shows. I've had a lot of nonprofit organizations. And the thing about nonprofit organizations, which you've probably had too, they come to the show, and then I'm immediately on their mailing list that they don't want me to contribute to them.
Of course, and our contribution, I mean, I love doing that. It's like I have call-outs for Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina and Ronald McDonald House of Durham on the show. And it's good to be able to give them the visibility of community radio and the listeners.
Yeah, I think you and I probably touch each other's shows without knowing it.
Yeah.
Like I'm having the lady from Chapel Hill, Annette Stone.
Right.
And
it was on last week.
Yeah, you were on her show, and you're having I mean, you had her last week.
And,
it's Brian Toomey I'm having next week.
Okay.
And you're having
Piedmont Health. That's in January.
You're having it January, right? So
we still have to firm up a date on that because things are crazy since I put that form on my website. So any local business or even national business can go online to fill out to be a guest on the show.
Yeah.
And so that's generating so
much
interest.
You have clients all over the country, maybe all over the world.
I do. All of North America. So yeah. Canada, Mexico, and then 46 states. So I still need to get Hawaii and Alaska. I think it's Idaho and one of the New England states. I'd love to be able to say I have to go to Hawaii to see a client.
Well, you'll come to my show soon, and we'll find out all about what you have. Because
would love to do that.
Sounds interesting.
So you've had an interesting background. You grew up in Ohio. Well, I went to Ohio State, and grew up in West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And you went into counter-espionage.
Well, after I finished college, I'm pretty old. It was during the time of the Korean War.
Okay.
And I tried to get into radio because I worked on the college I went to, a small school in Ohio, you mentioned their name, Worcester, started a radio station while I was a student there. So I decided, well, I like to talk, so I became a disc jockey or whatever we had back in those days. On that station, and did okay. So I thought, I'll get a job in radio when I finish college. So a friend of mine was the sales manager for a radio show in Elyria, Ohio, and he arranged for me to have an interview, and I had a nice interview. And the guy said, well, tell me about your status with the draft. Well, they were drafting. I said, well, I'm a potential draftee.
Right.
He said, well, come see us when you're out of the Army.
Because basically everybody was getting drafted that was eligible, right?
So I didn't get a job, and I never did get a job in radio because when I got out of the Army, I just got a job in business and got married and did that kind of routine. So the Army also educated me, as you said, particularly in the world of counterintelligence. And the Army, I mean, they wasted a lot of money on me. They were very good to me, and I was only there for 2 years as a draftee. But I first had to go to the basic training, which everybody does up in the mountains of Pennsylvania in a place called Indiantown Gap Military Reservation, which is now a state park. And then they said, okay, anybody interested in joining the Counterintelligence Corps or anybody interested in joining the Airborne, meet at the Post Theater. Well, I was not interested in jumping out of airplanes.
Waste of a perfectly good airplane, right?
Right. So I went over to hear the story about the CIC, which I'd never even heard of course. And so several of us went to that and signed up as potential draftees for that. Well, two of us got picked. I was so glad to get picked for that. So they sent me to Baltimore, to Fort Holabird. Fort Holabird is the training ground for this organization, CIC in East Baltimore. And they trained me in how to interview. They trained me in how to do certain technical things. They trained me in how to train me in how to use a pistol. They trained me in some German language, although they didn't know where I was going to be assigned when I finished the class there. And when you finish all this training, you kind of are suspicious of everybody. you have to learn how to ferret out the real bad people from the rest of us. But so anyway, there was a very interesting training course. I guess it was. I don't know, 6 months or so.
Well, I was going to say, so you were in like 24 months.
Right.
Basic training was usually like 6 weeks, right?
No, that was 16 weeks.
16 weeks, wow,
yeah,
okay.
So then I went to Baltimore for another 16 weeks.
So essentially 4 months of basic training.
My first year was all classroom.
That's what I was going to say, and then you were deployed essentially
then
for
I
a
went
year.
To Germany, and I was assigned to a unit in Augsburg, Germany, which is a nice Bavarian city, an old city full of German history. But also, this was right after the war. This was 1952, so there were ruins in all these German cities. But two things I noticed quickly when we landed. I was on a troop ship, and we landed in Bremerhaven, and they put us on a train to take us down to Stuttgart, which was kind of a headquarters of the CIC in Germany. And I noticed as we were coming down through Germany on the train, people were out, mostly women, out planting flowers, cleaning up the area around train tracks. Right. It was like a luxury. Everything was spotless. And they still do that. They still keep their countries more neat than we do around our railroad tracks. So then I got to Stuttgart, and I was assigned there for a while till they permanently signed me in Augsburg. But the first thing they gave me to do was to learn how to open envelopes surreptitiously and photograph the insides and seal them again so that the recipient would not know that these envelopes had been opened.
Is that like a steaming process?
Right, process and an ironing process. And I was at that, for that training, I was in the Stuttgart post office and working with a couple of Germans, and two of us Americans were assigned to this training process. And working with a couple of Germans, so we didn't have much good.
So it was kind of like a joint effort, or was
right?
It,
well, the Germans
keeping an eye on you.
The German post-war government was still looking for
Nazi sympathizers.
Yeah, all kinds of sympathizers, okay. And East European sympathizers, and so they would know which all the mail for the day would come into this room or a couple of rooms on the third floor of the Stuttgart post office, and the German guys would know which envelopes to pick out. They had They had a list of names that were potential suspects. Now we do it through the National Security Agency, and we take it through the internet.
Yeah, they're probably recording us right now.
Right, that's right.
Because we're streaming live.
That's true. So we learned all this stuff, and you know, I think I was there for 2 weeks. That was my first assignment in Germany until I finished that training, and I never used the training.
Right.
Somebody must have. My friend who was from Wisconsin was with me back in Augsburg, and he never used it either. But I've used it at home since. And I'll never tell you why.
I was going to say in what way. But I'll let you pass on that one.
So then I went back to Augsburg, and we had teams. We had a counterintelligence team, and their job was to basically investigate mostly women who were planning to marry American soldiers.
Oh, okay.
And there was a lot of this romance, of course, after the war.
Yeah, my uncle did that. He married one of the ladies from Austria.
Oh, okay. So the counterintelligence team did a lot of investigating people who were going to be involved with American people or governments or whatever.
Or servicemen. That's right.
And then we had a counter-surveillance team. I think that was it. I'm not sure that's... But they were responsible for intercepting messages, doing things like phone messages, radio messages, whatever technology we had in those days, and translating it. Then I was on the counter-espionage team, and our job was to, as I told you in my little write-up, was to seek and find potential spies from the East who came to the West. And our whole idea in counterintelligence was to counter the intelligence of the other side, to destroy it. And but the other side was sending these people to get acquainted with the Americans, soldiers primarily,
right,
and other people, and
get
information.
Because if you marry a soldier, you immigrate
right
to the United States.
So we had, we knew who some of these people were. We had spies of our own. We employed the ex-Gestapos of the Nazis, who were very smart and very good at this. And of course, they had nothing to do after the war was over. So it's better to employ them for us than for the other side. I got to know one of them pretty well, and we paid them with German marks, or we paid them with American cigarettes, or whatever they wanted.
Right.
And they would say, okay, Smolik is coming over from Czechoslovakia. He's on his way. He's going to be over here in 2 days. He's taking a train or something.
Right.
So we would have ourselves poised in a safe house where we'd have cameras and things where we knew people were going to buy, so we could photograph these people when they came
in. So could you, at that time, was the technology such that you could record conversations or pick up on conversations?
Well, we could. Not as well as we could today,
okay,
because most of our resources were cameras.
Right. Okay.
And of course, we could pick up normal radio stuff, but nothing fancy like the.
So it's not like when they build our embassies in foreign countries now, and they're just full of bugs.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Electronic bugs, that is.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So we became kind of familiar by name with some of these people. Oh, here comes Janosch. Oh, Janosch's coming, and we would be ready to photograph him. Or
so you were wanting to see who he was meeting, so
right,
that you could
right who
you
he
could
was
track,
meeting.
Right?
And
okay.
You know, there was one American captain in the army captain. We had a lot of army people there.
Great.
You know, leftovers from the war. In Augsburg and other parts of Germany, and there was one captain who was quite a good-looking young man, and there was a lady spy that he got involved with.
And he knew she was a spy, or she?
No,
he didn't know.
He
okay.
didn't know, but we do.
Okay.
And so we were able to neutralize that love affair.
Right.
But we didn't do it through.
You didn't have
we
to
didn't
use
kill
that,
anybody.
You didn't have to use that pistol training,
but you
just basically exposed it. And,
right. And I, you know, I was only there for a short time. I didn't speak German well. They sent me to another German school in Munich for a while, but I didn't pick up the language well. But some of my American cohorts picked up the language very
right.
well. They picked up the local Bavarian dialect, which is different from the High German dialect.
Right.
And so they could do much more in the underground work than I could, but nevertheless, I bought two suits of civilian clothes, which the government
right.
paid for. So when I came home from the army, I was well dressed when I got out of the army.
So
at the government's expense.
And so you decided to go into business,
right after the army, and they tried to get me to reenlist because, you know, I was just like everybody else. I was interested in my work. But I didn't want to become an army person.
Right, you didn't want a lifetime.
And my wife, or my young fiance at that time, decided she'd like to get married. So I came back to Ohio, and my parents lived in Cleveland, and I got married and got a job in the insurance business. I wanted to get a job where I could make some money, and I also had a kind of a desire to be to help people.
Right.
I didn't want to be a clergyman. My father was a Presbyterian minister, and I'd had,
oh, wow. okay.
had enough of that life. But so I didn't want to do that. But so I got a job in the world of employee benefits, group insurance, and I got a job in Connecticut, and I had to move to Hartford, Connecticut. And that's where my career started, from Hartford to Buffalo to New Jersey to New York and here.
And that's you settled in New York and started your business there?
Well, I settled in Hartford. I was worth the home office of one of these companies for 7 years. Then they transferred me to Buffalo, New York, which is a tough place in the middle of winter. But it was interesting. I loved Buffalo. And then I left that company and got a job in New York City and worked in New York City, even though I lived in New Jersey for 25 years. But I was back and forth to New York.
So do you still handle insurance and employee benefits in this
Well,
context,
I had a nice business of my own, which I sold to my son, and he's running it now in New York, although he does mergers and acquisitions, which he more cares for more than my old business. But my old business is still there. And moving down here, I didn't get involved with that because I was getting older and didn't have the connection, so I've transferred my business to what I can do in selling long-term care insurance to employers for their people to buy.
So the companies buy it.
The
as
companies
a
bit, don't
part
buy
of
it. The okay. companies don't pay for it. It's long-term care insurance is really not a company-sponsored benefit. They will sponsor it, but they will not pay for it. So we have interview meetings. In fact, I've got two meetings set up coming up, one next week and one the week after, with a company, and we'll have employee meetings. Anybody who wants to come, maybe three people will come,
right.
maybe 10 people will come. And I, a friend of mine and myself have a pretty much canned message.
Right.
And then for those who are interested, I make appointments to discuss it with them. It's long-term care insurance is not the easiest thing to understand, and it's not too cheap either.
Well, and let's kind of talk about it, because I like talking about those kind of things on the show, especially for entrepreneurs and people, the startup businesses that don't always know what all is out there. And so what is it? What size of company do you normally talk with? And what's the benefit of long-term care to your employees?
Well, I try to talk to companies with several hundred employees, because I have to have you have to have enough people buying it to get a company discount. The companies don't pay for it, but if you have, let's say, five people that buy it,
right.
then you'll get a discount by the from the insurance company. So we have presentations, and we encourage people to look at. A lot of people will look at it, but a lot of people don't buy it. They say,
"Oh, I mean, long-term care means you can't work. It's not disability, but it takes care of you.
Long-term care pays for you when you are unable to do two of five things in your daily living: eat, walk, take a bath." Go to the bathroom, any of those, two of those things you can't do, then you are paid by the insurance company whatever amount you chose to buy, how many, $100 a day or $3,000 a month.
So that would go to help you get assistance to
It'll help you buy assistance at your home. It will pay you if you go to a daycare center. It will pay you if you go to a nursing home. So it pays for whatever services you are buying with the amount of money that you decide to make available.
So what all kinds of services are included that you could buy?
Well, you can buy a nursing home, number one. That's full-time care. You live there, you eat there, you get all your care there. You can buy a daycare service where somebody takes you to a daycare during the day and brings you home at night like children. It will pay for people coming to your home to take care of you, to do these things that you can't do. So it'll also pay for an assisted living, not a nursing home, but assisted living. Assisted living places give you meals and cleaning, but they don't have medical.
Okay.
So, but it'll pay for those things. So it pays for a lot of things that you need or your family. See, a lot of people say, "Oh, my kids will take care of me." I've heard that from a lot of people, older people. And I say, well, number one, you can't count on that.
And number two, there's still expense associated with it.
Right. So they're going to, but your kids are going to have to hire people to do things that they can't do. So this insurance plan is going to help pay for them. The sales overall sales philosophy to sell long-term care insurance that the insurance companies create is to protect your assets.
Right.
In other words, if you're retired, you have $300,000-$400,000 of assets.
If you're paying $100 a day for somebody to help you, that doesn't last long.
Right. That's right. So you need something to do this. And so the insurance companies are also, they're selective. They will not insure people who are have conditions already. Like I had a lady in one of my prospects in a firm. She said, "I just found out I have scleroderma."
Okay.
Which is a condition that freezes your
joints. It hardens
your joints. Yeah. Well, they won't take her. Now, if she didn't know that, if she had applied
before
6 months before that, she would have been accepted.
So I imagine things like if you've already been diagnosed with MS or something like that,
right.
you would be excluded.
Yeah,
but if you get diagnosed after you've already bought it,
that's okay. Fine, they're right. not going to cancel you, no.
Right.
They'll take people with certain levels of diabetes, but not heavy levels. So take certain, and they'll take people based on weight or lack of. There's a number of things that turn people away or make them pay a little more for the insurance premium. So that's the way that benefit works. So I think it's important because, you know, people your age, you're young, you don't think about these things. But maybe in 20 years or 30 years.
Well, I think about it, but I already have a pre-existing condition from my 20s that would get me excluded. So it's you do think about certain things, but most people don't think about, they think about life insurance, because what if I die?
Right, right.
But they don't think about what if something happens and I'm living, but I'm not really living. You know,
right.
You're not able to do for yourself and be independent.
Yeah,
and right. We're living longer.
That's right. And some of the retirement communities around here, we have these continuing care communities like home out in Pittsburgh, whatever it is.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Carolina Meadows,
right, right.
And then there's Crowsdale Village, which is near where I live now.
Cary has a lot of assisted living
right,
communities
and
things.
So some of these places will take you, and they have different levels of care.
Right.
Some of them have full time nursing care, like the Forest at Duke and Carolina Meadows and Crowsdale Village. They have full time
right.
nursing care, and they get benefits for Medicare and Medicaid. Now, Medicaid pays more than any other facility in the country for long-term care because people can pare down their
right.
assets and get
qualify
rid
of, more, right.
get rid of their assets, and then Medicaid will pay them. So a lot of people do that, and that's costing Medicaid a lot of...
That's why it's going broke.
That's right, right. that's right. And so a lot of the states now, they have a system called a partnership where, I'm not going to explain the details of it, but with a partnership, you don't have to...
Get rid of your assets.
You don't have to pare down everything, and you'll keep Medicaid out. And,
right.
And you don't have to get rid of all your assets. So, it's a complicating thing. When they started the so-called Obamacare, they had in it a $50 a month, a week, I'm not sure what it was, benefit for long-term care. And then the government said, we can't afford that. Anyway, they cut that out. So there is no long-term care benefit from the normal health insurance, whether it's so through the government or whether it's except for Medicaid.
Right. Yeah.
Medicare will pay something. If you're in the hospital and you go to a nursing home, if you're in the hospital for 3 days and then go to a nursing home, you'll get a certain number of days of Medicare, which is good.
Right.
14 days, I believe, of full coverage. Then they'll have a smaller coverage later. So it's, people think about it, and I tell people to read about everybody who buys it. It's required to get quite a thick volume put out by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Nobody wants to read it, but it's telling people all about it.
And how it works and what's excluded, what's included, what it has to do.
That's right. So that's the story about long-term care insurance.
Well, that's something, again, we don't always think about. Life insurance is almost automatic, you think about it. And I see a lot of people with life insurance that have no dependents, no family, but yet they'll spend millions try to get a couple million-dollar policy or something like that. And then it's like, well, why are you doing that? I would be more concerned about what happens if I get sick long term, but they don't have that coverage.
Well, I've had several people on my show. I'll have another show about this in a couple of weeks about the Obamacare or the ACA,
American Affordable Care Act.
I call it the
UCA. We've done a couple shows on it.
I call it the Unaffordable Care Act.
Yes.
And you're covered by something, you said. Even
I actually am opted out of insurance and Obamacare entirely. I do a Christian health cost sharing program called MediShare.
Okay.
And so
MediShare, I've heard of that, yeah.
And so I switched to that this year because it's more consistent, one, with my values and what's covered and what's not. It's a lot less expensive. And then it's, doing what the Bible essentially says, share your cost.
Okay, well, tell me about that. How do you pay and what benefits are available?
So most things are covered. You pick a deductible, and then based on your age, if you're doing it for a family or someone single and stuff, you pay that premium. If you're heavier, there's a weight premium, that kind of stuff, because there's an assumption that you're going to be sicker more often.
Uh-huh.
And some pre-existing conditions are excluded initially, but as the group is growing, because there's well over 60,000 people participating in the pool now, we can voluntarily contribute more to pay somebody's unexpected cost. And then there's a short-term disability program called MANA. And so it's relatively inexpensive. It's less than a third of the cost a month of what my traditional insurance was charging. And what I actually found is after doing with my insurance and I had drug coverage, my copays turned out were higher than the actual cost of most of my drugs.
Wow.
And so going from several hundred a month for my migraine medication and different things went down. Say, just thyroid medicine was amazing. I was paying, I think, $35 a month as a copay. Well, 90 days is only $14.32.
So that's what your condition is, a thyroid condition?
I have a thyroid condition and several other things, but mainly it's the migraine and the thyroid and things like that. But those are covered under the normal program.
So how about going to the doctor?
Going to the doctor, you pay some out of pocket, but it's a discount program. So any other insurance, we have in-plan doctors, and you go, and there's a substantial discount on that, and then they cover your blood work and all that kind of stuff. Again, there's a copay, but it's not... even 20% of the cost.
So some place, somebody, some group runs this program. And
it's ChristianCare.org.
Uh-huh.
And if you go to myChristianCare.org, it is a nonprofit Christian group running it.
Okay. And so you pay them once
a
month?
So you actually have a bank account that the escrow, it gets essentially an escrow amount it goes in, and then once a month they pick it up. So my short-term disability is like $18, $20 a month or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it covers.
So how long have you been in this program?
Almost a year.
Okay. And you've used it.
I have used it, and it is, compared to paying $1,000 a month for my insurance premium, I'm paying about $400 and something a month, including disability, which I didn't have before.
Okay, yeah.
And like I said, my drug copays went from a couple hundred a month to about $25 to $30 a month.
So you got a lot of extra money. You can hang out at the bar and drink.
I wish I drank some days. The interesting thing and the difference is, again, it's not an insurance program, so there's no tax deduction on your tax for having insurance.
Right.
But I've spent less than a third of what I was normally spending on healthcare costs by making the switch.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if there's some extraordinary event, one of the members, her husband, he's a member too, but was riding his bike and got hit by a car and had tremendous, insurance or medical costs for hospital intensive care, rehab, and it's been covered.
Really?
Everybody just chipped in extra, and so whatever extra we put in is a charitable deduction.
Sure.
And otherwise, and it's great because there's prayer things. There's actually a trade stream in there and stuff too. So it's really about a community and building a community.
Mm-hmm.
Versus a contractual relationship with an insurance company.
And pre-existing conditions are?
Some of them are covered and others aren't.
Uh-huh.
And they're adding in more and more as the group gets larger and larger.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
your group, you say, has about 60,000 people.
When I joined last year, it was at 60,000. I think it's getting close to 70.
Well, isn't there another group like this?
There are several.
Christian group?
Right. Yeah, so under Obamacare legislation, there were a few cutouts that allowed groups like this to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't cover things that most Christian groups object to.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're more than welcome
to
do those.
Okay.
There's a profession of faith statement and some lifestyle things that you agree to do.
Well, we'll talk more about that when you come on my show. You and your work in that field and your overall work,
because
you have interesting clients all over the country.
Yeah, it's fun. So we'll have to schedule that and let everybody know when we're going to switch chairs and you're going to host and I'm going to be answering the questions. So you're out here, you're in the community. I know I've connected with you at the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber. You seem to be active in doing things. So kind of let us know what life's like living in North Carolina for you as a quasi-retiree.
Well, life is interesting because after my wife died living in New Jersey, I was floating around as a middle-aged single male. And with my business in New York, my insurance agency, and I went to my college reunion in Ohio, and lo and behold, I met a college classmate from North Carolina who was single. This is a woman.
Right.
And she had been divorced for a while, and I didn't know her in college. I knew who she was because she was in a different group of friends than I had, and so we decided we'd get in touch with each other, and getting in touch with each other became more and more intimate as time went on.
Right.
And lo and behold, we got married down here on the beach in Emerald Isle.
Oh, great. Okay.
And so, but I was still working in New York and still had my business in New York, and I was living in New Jersey. And so she decided, well, I'll move to New Jersey, which wasn't the easiest thing in the world for a North, because she was born in Durham. So she's a North Carolina woman.
She's a native.
Right. And she moved to New Jersey. And then I sold my business to my son. And he came to the office one day and said, Dad, I'd like to buy your business. He was working for Chemical Bank, which is now part of Chase. And so we worked together for a while, my son and I.
Right.
And he bought the business. And I said to Sally, and she was from here, and she had some land that she had inherited from her father in Hillsborough. So I said, well, let's move to North Carolina and build a house. So we sold our house in Ridgewood, New Jersey, and moved to New York for a year in an apartment while we were having our house built in Hillsborough. So that's how I got here. And, you know, it's been an interesting life because Sally knows so many people.
Right.
And she's introduced me to a lot of people. I have to give her credit if she's listening or she's not listening, really for getting me involved kind of with the radio station, because a friend of hers was doing promotion for whatever she could do promotion for people. She was kind of a low-level promoter. But
okay.
She got me an interview with this station 10
just
years ago.
Was a getting started.
I was being
we just
interviewed because
year,
I had
right?
written a book on business. And so this lady got me an interview on the show that Chris Frank was running. So I finished being interviewed by Chris Frank. And he said, "Bill, how would you like to do a show?" So I said, "Well, I've never done a radio show since college, but let's see it." So I did a show.
So
and
you
here
were one of the first shows on air with WCL.
Yeah, a little after, about a year after it started.
Okay.
And so then I started up and I said, "Well, if I'm going to do an interview show, I'd like to do it at 5 o'clock in the afternoon," which turns out to be a good time for people are working people. If they're working, they can leave a little early to get here.
Right.
Or, you know, it's just before their dinner time. So that's how it started, and it's been.
So why did you call it Time Out?
I guess I like the song. I guess I like the Brubeck CD. So we play a Dave Brubeck number as our theme song.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's been a good experience, and you know, I've also gotten to know through people through my church, and I get a lot. My church is downtown Durham. And there are a lot of people from that church who are involved in nonprofits or who work for Duke,
right,
and or other things. And I've had a lot of them on my show, so it's a good source of interviews.
And you've done some kind of like October was your health month, I think, and
right.
You did some shows this month.
Right. And that's the last October will be Brian Toomey of the Piedmont Health Services, which is right across the street from where our studio is.
And we're on East Main Street in Carver.
That's right.
We're in the Arts Center, just outside the Arts Center.
Right, that's right. Yeah, we have a very good location. I don't know. We've been around when I first started. I don't know where you were. Were you here or were you at the other side?
I started here. I've been on the air just over 2 years.
Okay. Well, we were right across the parking lot from where this station is.
Okay.
We're in a building which is no longer there, which has been replaced by the Fleet Feet building. And before that, we were across the street on Greensboro Street, across the street from Weaver Street Market, which is a building that's been all fenced off. They're trying to build a big drugstore there or something.
Okay.
And that was a terrible studio because the roof leaked, and I think
it's kind of the story of community radio and small town radios, and then it's usually we're in some kind of small
right.
Area trying to make our shows happen.
Right, you know, I like this area because people walk by. We're on a glass front studio. People walk by and they wave to us, and I wave to them,
I love it when the kids are here in the summer and going
right.
to the art camps, and then they're plastering their face and they're doing all kinds of things to try to crack you up while you're on the air.
Yeah, the Art Center is a nice landlord. I don't know how long this relationship will last because, you know, we're a nonprofit. We're a tenant. We rent from them,
right.
And they could throw us out. They have a new manager now. In fact, I understand that our lease is up.
Okay. Well, then.
So we have to renew it, and I've heard from our treasurer Ernie Hood that he's waiting to hear what the new lease
right.
will be, and I don't know what.
Well,
the story.
And it's a good time then to say we're community radio. We're funded by our listeners and our underwriters, and we have a fundraiser coming up November 5th, 5 to 10 p.m. at our neighbor here, Hickory Tavern. It's located in the Hampton Inn at 370 East Main Street. If you come on by 5 to 10 p.m. on November 5th. We're going to have a raffle. We're going to have some door prizes. We're going to have a band playing.
We're going to have a great time.
Yeah. We've had two of these so far, and they've been great successes. This will be the first time we've had the live band, so we're looking forward to that. So if you can't come, still donate, but we would love to see a great turnout at Hickory Tavern on November 5th from 5 to 10 p.m. And come by, buy some raffle tickets, and support the station.
We've had some good results. Last time, before the last show, I sent emails to some of my previous guests on
right.
my show, and some of them showed up.
That's great. I think that's a good idea for all of us
yeah.
to reach out to our previous guests and put it out on social media and all of those kind of things, because that's what the station right now is trying to build the momentum. We've got some great shows. We've got opportunities to have more great shows. We just need the funding and the space.
The show that precedes you on, well, you Thursday's or Tuesday's a big day. You have Claudio at 10 o'clock. Was right. Claudio on today?
No, he did a pre-recorded show. It was Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater. And yeah. So he did a rerun this morning. And then Kelly and Janice do the Say Yes to the Chef show. And then I do mine. And Art's on with a music show in the
afternoon.
Oh, he's
on today. What time is he on?
I think he's on at 4 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Don't call me to that. And then we have the Family Law show with John.
With John Fernandez.
Right.
Right,
and
that's
so
right.
It's a two-hour show. It's a great show everyone should tune into and get some legal tips. And
I listen to John at home quite often, and it's heavy stuff. I mean, he really gives a lot of good advice. And he sometimes has guests on his show, too.
Yeah, and so it's like Tuesday seems to be like, you know, a busy day. Wednesdays we have Courage Cocktail on Radio En Vivo. You're on Mondays. Mm-hmm. Rocco does the three-hour music show on Saturdays. I guested with him on Saturday, and you were there, too. And mm-hmm. we had a blast doing some of the songs and telling the stories.
Right, right. Well, Rocco's been on the station longer than I have. He had his 10th anniversary last year.
Right.
So, and he says, I don't know, Bill, I don't know how long I'm going to do this. I said, Rocco, just keep doing it. I think it's
the drive time that gets him when he comes in from either the eastern part of the state or the western part of the state.
Right, even though he has an apartment right here in town.
He's got lots of the irons in the fire, and he's great. He's been doing radio longer than I've been on the earth.
Yeah, okay.
So he started radio before I was born, so I kind of tease him about that.
Well, it's been fun. It's been fun being with you today, too, and I think I've told you everything I have except secrets about my life.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know what else to tell you because I have three children. I'll tell you about
them. Okay.
My daughter, she composes
she's
music.
She's a musician. Okay.
And she performs. She performs all kinds of music. She performs for particularly children. She composes music for children. And she composes religious music. And I'd love to get you... I don't have my give them all out.
Right.
She sent me 10.
You said she had some gospel.
She has some great stuff for children in gospel music for kids.
We'll have to have her call into the show as a guest one of these days.
Sure, she'd love to do that.
We'd love to do that.
Yeah, and she's been on my show a lot. She lives in New Paltz, New York, so she's not around very often. But she's been on my show, and she's called in, and she'd be glad to call in sometime and play some of her stuff and tell you what she's doing in her musical Christian life.
Right.
And I have my one son has my business in New York, which I told you about, and he lives in Manhattan with his wife, who is the chief operating officer of a Riverside Group, a private equity company. And
okay.
They have two children. One, the boy, just graduated from Duke and now works for J.P. Morgan Chase, and the daughter is now a freshman at Duke.
So you're a grandpa.
So I have a grandpa, and I have a granddaughter in town, which I hope to see once in a while. And
if she's in college, don't count on a grandpa.
I know. Well, I did have her over for dinner once night since
I was going to say,
here.
Laundry day and dinner.
Right, yeah. So anyway, I have another son who's in Albuquerque, and he and his wife are an interesting couple. They used to live in New York, and he started out as a partly not finishing college, and got involved with music as a drummer.
Oh, okay.
And he was doing bands in New York, lived with me in New Jersey for a while. And so he and his buddies moved to Austin, Texas, which is the big
right.
music part of the world. And survived for a while, and then didn't make a fortune, and he got a job with somebody else helping to do some carpentry,
okay.
and he was always good at that type of stuff. He had done some odd jobs in New Jersey, and learned more and more about that, and then came back to New York for a while, and through his brother became acquainted with a Frenchman who owned a very fancy cabinet shop in the Bronx.
Oh,
so he got
okay.
a job working for this guy in this cabinet shop, and he was not married then. No, he wasn't married then. But he learned well.
Cabinet making.
Yep, and he learned well and made a deal to buy the shop from the owner.
Oh, okay.
In the meantime, and married a sharp lady from Austin that he had met in Austin. And she kind of helped him doing some of the brain work
the
in the place.
Stuff,
and they
right.
built a very nice business. They're quite well known. They did a lot of – they did all like kitchen work and libraries for people on Park Avenue and Fifth
right.
Avenue. They did Woody Allen's kitchen.
Oh, wow.
And things like that. And but they had to fight the union all the time.
Yeah, it's New York.
It's New York. And so they finally gave up. and moved to Albuquerque. He sold whatever he could of his business and moved to Albuquerque, where they live now. And now he's got a job as the cabinet manager for a large construction company, which builds hotels and schools all over the state all over New Mexico. So he's on the road a lot, but he's got a good job managing the cabinet part of this big construction company.
Well, and that knowledge.
And his wife is doing. She's kind of like you. You two would get along very well. She does a lot of branding work, marketing for other companies, and she's got her own little company. I'm not sure what the name of it is. So she travels to New York a lot. She has a regular client at the Fashion Institute.
Oh, okay.
So she's back and forth to New York, and she's...
That's a nice flight between Albuquerque and New York.
Right. Yeah, it is. There's no direct flights.
No.
So they're coming to New York in December, and I hope they come down here because I like to see them if I can.
Well, you'll have to get them to move to North Carolina.
We were there for Christmas last year in Albuquerque. I've been to Albuquerque twice since they've been there, both in the wintertime, which is not the best time to go, but... it's an interesting world out in New Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, the color is so different from here and just the whole lifestyle and stuff. I flew into Albuquerque to go to Santa Fe and was looking at the train that connects the two cities.
We took the train up, And, of course, New Mexico has a lot of land that is partly Indian reservation.
Mm-hmm.
So that world is there.
Yeah, and you see the casinos on that on each
That's
side
right.
of the road.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, we were there this last winter. His company is building an addition and a parking garage and a big addition to a casino. And he took us out there to see the construction. And it was, that was interesting. But it's a very different world
and different codes for building and things like that. So I was asking, because you drive by and everything's some shade of sand or terracotta or whatever, and was asking about some of the codes. And yeah, there's all limited number of house colors in Santa Fe and things.
That's
like that.
Right. Well, Santa Fe is quite a unique city.
Yeah. So we have actually vacationed just north of Santa Fe up in the mountains for about a week last year. So no phones, no TV, no radio. I do have to confess I took my Wi-Fi spot and my phone and stuff, but I was the only one whose phone connection actually worked. So if people needed to connect their phones, they had a hard time connecting. So, but it was a nice retreat. I think I need to find another place where you completely unplug.
Yeah, Sally's good friend Larry Dossey, he lives up in the mountains somewhere near Santa Fe, and I don't quite sure which mountain.
The thing I did not enjoy is I was hoping to get away from weather migraines, and I got out there, and I'm at 8,000 feet, and 3 days in a row the thunderstorm hit, and I swear I must be a lightning rod because I was so charged.
You got weather migraines?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that's, I have a migraine all the 24/7. So.
Really?
Yeah. Have for 36 years. So, but nobody wants to hear about that. But I'm going to give
We're about done here.
We are just a few minutes. I'm going to talk about my guest next week is Mike McCready of it's Music X-Ray, which is an internet-based music talent platform out of New York City.
So internet-based.
Right. Music. So you go to their website, and it's Music X-Ray.
X-Ray, okay.
Right. And so it's listing job opportunities and different talents. So let's say you need a voiceover specialist, or you need somebody to sing your jingle, or just all kinds of things out there. And so you log into the website and you can go find the talent for that. And so Mike has started that, and he's going to be on the show next week.
So he's going to be on the show by phone.
By phone. I'm doing a lot of phone guests. Yeah. Again, I put that format on the internet, and I'm trying to limit the national bookings to about 25% of the time. So one a month, hopefully. And then God bless Annette Stone. She sent out the form information, and we've got all kinds of great talent coming up in November that's local.
Oh, good.
So we're going to be talking about the Fair Labor Standards Act on November 10th. Claudio is going to make a visit on November 17th. Oasis Carborough is coming on in December.
What's his name?
It runs I'm drawing that a place. Blank. Right, yeah, the owner.
I've been over there a few times.
Synergy Flow Arts is coming on. We're going to do a Christmas show. And we are booked into January with local companies coming on air and some national ones, too.
That's great. Yeah, well, I haven't done much in December yet. I'm trying to get Congressman Price on again, and this guy in New York, in Washington, said, "Yeah, we'll get on his schedule." So I emailed him again yesterday. I said, "Oh, I'm booked through November. So do you have any times?" And you have to get him
when he's in town, when he's home. Yeah,
and he's been a good guest.
He's been on your show 2 times.
He's been on a show at least 3, maybe 4 times. And I asked him way back when, I said, well, Congressman Price, why do you so willing to come to this little dinky radio station? He said, I can say anything I want here.
And he gets the whole hour.
Right, he does, yeah.
So that I think that's what community radio is great about, giving platforms to the local business, to the national, to the regional on different topics. We've done politics. We've done economics. We do Main Street. We do Wall Street.
That's right, yeah.
And everything in between.
It's a lot of fun. I had Congressman Price on with my retired ambassador, the two of them at one point. And that was interesting because Congressman Price, he's in his channel. You know, he's been in Congress for 13 terms.
So, right, so
he's
26
in, he's
years.
In his Democrat channel. The ambassador doesn't really play politics because he, as a foreign service officer, he can't be political. So the two of them got, one of them sitting on my right here, and one of them sitting in the chair I'm sitting in, and you
did
can
you have
see
a
from
referee?
Time to time they didn't necessarily agree with each other, but they had to be polite.
'Cause I think that's the important thing, the dialogue, and I think we've lost that in Congress. We don't always have to agree.
That's right.
But we should be able to agree to discuss.
That's right. Yeah.
And look at the other perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that doesn't always happen. And then it's, I'll kind of flash back to the Star Wars thing we were talking about at the beginning of the show. They released the trailer apparently yesterday. And I don't want cards and letters, but I have to confess, I have never watched a Star Wars movie, not even the first one. And so we were talking about it, but social media took off with all, I guess, kind of hate. Haters and arguing and stuff and death threats to people back and forth. That's not civil discourse. You can agree. There's no reason to become.
Yeah, social media has so many tracks they're running on that are destructive rather than
constructive.
Constructive, right? Yeah.
And it's fine to disagree. We're going to have disagreements, but if we can't sit down across the table, nothing gets accomplished. So. Mm-hmm. Like I have a returning guest on February 2nd to talk about the balanced budget amendment initiative again, and we have to get a federal balanced budget amendment. I mean, it's our grandchildren are now probably our great 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 grandchildren are going to be paying it off the way things are.
I was watching a long interview with Jamie Dimon, the head of Chase J.P. Morgan, yesterday on the Bloomberg Channel, and it was a long interview, and. He meant a similar thing. He said, I don't believe in quarterly reports. These corporations give out quarterly reports all the time because the
stock market. Strictly driven by the stock market,
He said, look, information that's coming this quarter was something that decisions were made maybe 3 years ago or maybe even by my predecessor. He said, why bother the media with a quarterly report with stuff that really doesn't mean much?
Well, it's one of my cousins used to work in the government up in D.C., and he had to scurry around every morning to produce this report, and then he had to drive through the morning traffic and deliver it to another office. And so he would get in like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, finalize the report, get in the car, you know, get stuck in traffic, go across town and drop it off. And he went one day, he said, and it was raining, so he had his umbrella. He dropped off the report and then left, but then he realized he'd forgotten his umbrella. So he just turned around and walked back in to see the government worker putting his, you know, 6-hour blood, sweat, and tears report in the trash can. And he said, you know something's wrong and it's time to quit.
I guess so.
When you spend your life generating the information for that to find out, it just goes in the trash.
Oh, how awful.
And he said he stopped generating that report, and no one ever made a comment. No one even noticed it, never. And I said, well, no one's going to notice it when the trash can every time you dropped it off.
Yeah, one thing at Jamie Dimon, along those lines yesterday, he said, I know we have to have regulations and regulators, but he said, we have so many regulators coming at me from different parts of the government that it makes it very difficult and almost impossible to do our job.
Well, the other thing is, it's like you can't enforce 10 bazillion regulations because you can't train people to know what those regulations are. So I do a lot of government grant and contract consulting on the compliance end. So they get our tax dollars and I help them put the systems in to make sure they're compliant and using the funds correctly. And one of the big challenges is when one of the government auditors comes in and you realize they've barely had any accounting classes. They may have just come out of college.
Oh, boy.
They don't know how to look in an accounting system. And I had a couple clients up in the Massachusetts area. One was a huge company, had, you know, a high-end mainframe accounting system that international business had all of this stuff, had controls and everything in there. The auditor that showed up knew QuickBooks and had only ever worked with small businesses. Next day, I get a call from another company saying, the auditor's here. They, you know, we were recommended to call you to help us deal with it. They think we should upgrade to this huge computer system because we're using QuickBooks. And so I'm calling the office that assigned them out of the Boston office, and I'm like, why did you do that? They said, well, we assign them first come, first served. And I'm like, but look at it. You assigned the auditor that was qualified to audit an international company, the small business, and he's clueless. And you assigned the guy that knew small businesses and QuickBooks, and he's clueless because he's sitting in a company and trying to tell him, well, you may need to make your chart of accounts work this way. There's no way a company is going to rewrite their chart of accounts for an entire international organization based on $1 million grant. And so the logic a lot of times is really, you know, lacking.
That's right.
The intent might be good. The execution's really poor. And we're looking at the clock.
I'm looking at the clock. It's time for the show to be over. We're supposed to end at 5 of the next hour.
And it's 5 o'clock. And since I just posted the signs in here today, I think we better obey.
It's been nice talking with you, Leah. And we will arrange for you to sit in this seat, and I'll sit in that seat, and we'll do it. A repeat or a reverse of this.
Oh, that sounds like fun. So just let me know. And I want to thank Bill Hendrickson, host of Time Out Mondays 5 to 6, for being on Focus on Business today. You're listening to WCOM FM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro.